today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
She began to spend more time in the city, visiting the music division of the Library of Congress, to try to answer a burning question she had. What was American about American folk songs? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of our music podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Before we get into today's book nook, another book nook, back-to-back book nooks, I want to remind everybody out there who's a new music aficionado that the deadline for June 2025 new music calls and picks is Sunday, July 20th. That's right, Sunday, July 20th. Please get your picks in by then. And I want to thank everybody who has already submitted their picks. Much appreciated. And we will get that lined up for you and started on the week beginning July 21st. All right, with that business out of the way, folks, why don't we all join together now and step into the book nook.
Welcome to the book nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's a Kindle?
Thanks, as always, to the lovely and talented Mike Wagner for Book Nook Music. It's very, very fun to collaborate with Mike on that little ditty. The book I'm going to tell you about today is a little bit different from the rock and roll war stories that we had yesterday with Alan Jones. This book was published in 2024, and I am holding a copy of the first edition from Pegasus Books. The book is entitled A Chance to Harmonize and is subtitled How FDR's Hidden Music Unit Sought to Save America from the Great Depression, One Song at a Time. And the author is Cheryl Kaskowitz, K-A-S-K-O-W-I-T-Z. Cheryl is a music historian who also wrote a book about the history of the song God Bless America. I haven't read that one, but it sounds very interesting. This book was given to me by my eldest offspring as a gift, and I have found it to be very, very interesting. I knew nothing about this, and I find it to be a very, very interesting little chapter in American history, and this book does a wonderful job of going through it and telling you what happened, and also really breathing life into the main characters of this story, and you feel like you're there with them as they try to achieve this goal. So let me read to you now to kind of outline this better than I could do by just sort of trying to relate it to you from what I read. I found a site called The Living New Deal, and it seems to be a lot about the history of FDR's New Deal. Let me quote to you now, quote, "The Resettlement Administration, RA, was a sprawling New Deal agency created in 1935 to oversee a disparate set of government initiatives, most of which focused on providing help in rural areas. This included an experimental program to build new homestead communities for displaced populations. Farmers whose land had failed, miners whose mine had shut down, and unemployed urban workers willing to try rural life. almost completely lost to history as the agency's music unit, hidden within the RA's vaguely named Special Skills Division, which left a trove of recordings documenting the folk music of Depression-era America. The rich collection of recordings made for the RA, now archived at the American Folklife Center of the Library of Congress, function as the sonic equivalents to FSA's famous photographs documenting the hardscrabble 1930s, sounds of resilience, joy, protest, pain, and humor among Americans struggling through the Great Depression. And I think one of the big takeaways for me is that it was a benefit to have recorded all this music and archived it. And I think the people involved in this music unit came to realize that. But I think originally, kind of the idea behind the music unit was that they would take songs and put out song sheets with lyrics and melodies and things like that, and take them to these homesteads where people have been resettled from their original place of residence. And, you know, oftentimes they'd be hundreds of miles away from where they spent their whole life, and use the songs and the music to help them bond as a community, to sort of help the strength of that community, to help them put down roots and to make these things long lasting. Now, of course, we know from history that it didn't always work out that way, and not a lot of these homesteads survived, but it was such an interesting idea that they tried to use music to do this. And that's kind of the gist of the book, and it's a really fascinating read. I mean, you really get into it, as I was saying. The three main characters for me are musicologist Charles Seeger, that's right, Pete's pop, and a very interesting character in his own right, music instructor Margaret Valiant, and, most interestingly to me anyway, folk music collector Sidney Robinson. Between 1936 and 1937, Robertson became Resettlement Administration's most prolific folk music collector, recording more than 800 songs on solo collecting trips to the Appalachians, the Ozarks, and the Upper Midwest. And there are elements that are very intriguing about this story, especially sort of along the political lines, because there were a lot of people who were Republicans, who were on the right, who were suspicious of what kind of activities. They were suspicious of what the Resettlement Administration was doing, how people who were working with it had to be careful, you know, not to get into something that might be considered socialism or communism. And obviously we know those threads, and that fear grew later in decades in America. And it's also very easy to get behind Robinson, who was driving around in this really old Ford car that she bought with her own money, driving in the mountains, driving all over the place across this country in the 1930s on roads that, you know, were barely roads and often in the wintertime disappeared altogether. And of course, she didn't have Google Maps. And there's one very funny part in the book where she's describing she's trying to get to Asheville, North Carolina, and she stopped to ask directions of someone, and she wrote, I keep getting directions like this: well, you go out on this road a good piece, and then you come to the most likely looking road, and that'll be it. So she was up against all these different factors. And Kaskowitz, the author, was able to put this story together thanks to reports Robinson wrote that have been preserved. She meticulously typed up these single-spaced reports each night on her activities and filed them back to the office in Washington, D.C. So what an amazing treasure trove it is. And she liberally uses these reports to weave the narrative. So really a fantastic book. I really dig it. Have enjoyed the heck reading out of it. And it's one of those things, when you jump into the story, and it's a little bit slow to start at first because it is a government initiative, and nobody, once it was okayed, really had all that much of an idea exactly how to do it. But, you know, once it begins to build momentum and they begin to understand that they are not only making an effort to unite these people, but also to preserve this amazing music that was taking place and being made and passed down from who knows where, you know, it became this this mission. And a big part of this was when the music unit was allowed or okayed to buy a tape recorder, you know, state of the art at the time, but of course a massive piece of equipment weighing hundreds of pounds that had to be taken everywhere and was very temperamental, and was always breaking down as it was in the back of somebody's car as they were driving all over the country on rudimentary roads. So that's all pretty neat. And that machine was approved personally by FDR. And as we know, Eleanor Roosevelt was a big advocate of American folk music. She attended folk music festivals and she was very enthusiastic about it and the culture of the country. There are anecdotes of when people from other countries would make an official visit to the White House, she would often request that folk musicians from Appalachia be brought to perform and entertain. And that all that momentum too, you know, was on the side of the music unit. Now, it doesn't all turn out rosy, and I'll leave that for you if you're going to read the book. I won't spoil it for you how the whole thing ends, but I do think it's really good. And so that leaves the question, what kind of music was being recorded and then passed on to other musicians? Well, here's an example. That was a recording of a song called My Horses Ain't Hungry by Rebecca and Penelope Tarwater on vocals and Charles Pollock and Bernard Steffen on the harmonica, recorded by Charles Seeger, June 2nd, 1936. Now, the other amazing thing about this book is that there's an online companion. If you go to Cheryl Kaskowitz's website, cherylkaskowitz.com/recordings, there's a whole bunch of music clips here that go with the chapters in the book. And I think most of these recordings are now preserved at the American Folklife Center in the Library of Congress, where a lot of this stuff ended up. Luckily, it was preserved and saved. And I think the other big thing I kind of got as an undercurrent from reading this book is that this probably is the germination of the folk music revival in America that reached its peak in the early 1960s, but also contained things like Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music. And when people began collecting these older songs and rediscovering these artists that were still out there, and all of that, which snowballed into the folk revival that, you know, turned popular music on its head in many ways. So again, another really interesting aspect of this book. So it's a really good book. I would highly recommend it if you're interested in this time period in the 1930s in American history. Once again, A Chance to Harmonize by Cheryl Kaskowitz. And that is available out there at all your reputable booksellers and Kindleization electronic reading places. So go ahead and pick it up, and I think you'll find it to be a very interesting and an easy read, man. You kind of breeze through it. It's like an adventure story once you start getting into the characters and their different to's and fro's, comings and goings, and goals and aims. All right, folks, with that, we will wrap up. We're going to go out with some music that is paired with the final chapter in the book, the epilogue. And we're going to hear Ernest Sexton on the jaw harp, recorded at one of the resettlement camps doing Turkey in the Straw. So I hope you enjoy that. And we will be back with another episode of Rockin' the Suburbs tomorrow. Tomorrow? We'll talk to you tomorrow.
My name is Ernest Sexton. I came from Clinton, Missouri to California to find work. I haven't had much luck yet.
Go out on this road a good piece, and then you come to the most likely looking road, and that'll be it.